Welcome back, everybody, to another deep dive. Today, we're looking at the long road to recovery in Western North Carolina after Hurricane Helene. Even months later, there's still so much devastation, and thousands of folks are trying to rebuild their lives with winter coming in. It's really a tough situation.
And you know, it's really about more than just rebuilding houses, right? You're talking about putting communities back together, and that's a whole lot more complicated.
It really is. And speaking of amazing coverage of extreme weather, I got to give a shout out to meteorologist Rob Jones. If you want to stay up to date on all things weather, you can find him on Instagram at meteorologist and on TikTok at TV Meteorologist. And over on YouTube, follow Hurricane Rob Jones. You can also find all of the Meteorology Matters podcasts there too. Okay, back to Helene. Can you just give us a sense of just how bad things are for folks in Western North Carolina right now?
Imagine a whole town's worth of people without homes. That's what over 12,000 residents are dealing with even now. And it's not just like a few houses here and there. We're talking estimates of damage to between 121,000 and 132,000 homes just in Western North Carolina alone.
Wow, those are some serious numbers. So with so much damage, FEMA must be super involved, right? But I've heard kind of mixed things about how they've been handling things. What's your take on all that?
Yeah, it's a mixed bag for sure. You got some politicians pointing fingers at FEMA's flood zone regulations, saying they're slowing down the whole process of getting people housing assistance.
Yeah.
But then you got FEMA pushing back saying, hey, it's not that simple. You know, they got to think about construction timelines and site requirements and making sure other housing options are available too. It's complicated.
So it sounds like there's a lot of back and forth going on. Can you explain a little bit more about these flood zone regulations and why they're such a big deal?
Well, they're super important, especially in areas that are prone to flooding, like Western North Carolina. And FEMA takes them very seriously. They have this whole 8-step process they go through to decide if construction is even allowed in a floodplain. It's not just a yes or no thing.
I see.
They have to consider all the risks and if there are other options and if anything they do build can withstand future flooding. So, yeah, it takes time and a lot of back and forth.
So it's not necessarily that FEMA is dragging their feet. It's more like they're working within a really complex system that's supposed to protect people and their property in the long run.
Exactly. But when you're in the middle of a disaster and you just need a place to live, you know, all that long-term stuff can be frustrating.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's easy to lose sight of the fact that there are real people with real stories behind all these policies and regulations. Any specific examples that come to mind?
Well, there's this couple in Marshall. They lost their home in the hurricane, and they're living in a FEMA-funded apartment right now. And while they're grateful for the help, they're living with so much uncertainty, just waiting for the next step, you know, for things to get back to normal.
It's heartbreaking to think about what they're going through. It really makes you realize this isn't just about rebuilding houses. It's about rebuilding lives.
Absolutely. And that leads us to the next big challenge, temporary housing. We always hear about FEMA trailers, but are those really the only option?
Well, it turns out it's not that simple. There's actually a whole mix of solutions happening, and each one comes with its own set of challenges.
Yeah.
Like FEMA has this transitional sheltering assistance program, and they've been putting people up in hotels.
Right.
But those have deadlines, and it's not clear if everyone's going to qualify for an extension.
Yeah, that's a huge concern. It's one thing to offer shelter, but it has to last and actually meet people's needs over time, you know, especially with winter coming in.
Yeah, the cold weather definitely adds another layer of urgency to the situation. And it's not just FEMA stepping up either. North Carolina went ahead and bought 1,000 travel trailers to help address the shortage.
Wow, that's good.
Yeah, and you've got amazing groups like Hope for Crisis coming in to provide and winterize campers. It's incredible to see everyone coming together to help out.
Yeah, you can really see how different levels of government and all kinds of organizations are working together and sometimes separately trying to fill in the gaps and help those who need it most.
It shows how important it is to be able to adapt and to work together when it comes to disaster recovery. But let's get real for a minute. What's it actually like for folks living in this temporary housing?
Well, take Vicky Rivas, for example. She lost her home along the Swannanoa River, and she's living in a donated RV now. And get this, her furnace isn't working properly, so she's been using pine needles for insulation to try and stay warm.
Oh my gosh. You know, it's easy to forget that these are real people with real lives behind the statistics.
Exactly. And sometimes those personal experiences highlight challenges that no one even thought of.
Like the propane problem.
Yeah, exactly. Propane isn't something you'd immediately think of as a major issue. But in Western North Carolina, a lot of people rely on it for heating. So it's become a huge bottleneck.
Okay, so what are the specific problems people are facing with propane?
Well, first of all, there just isn't enough propane in the area to meet the demand. And even if you can find it, transporting it to where it needs to go is a whole other challenge because of the mountains. So you've got people like Kathy Varvel, who's trying to work and also make sure her camper stays warm. It's got to be incredibly stressful.
Absolutely. It's like a whole other disaster on top of everything else they've already been through. Has the government done anything to help with this?
Thankfully, yes. Governor Stein issued an executive order to ease some of the restrictions on transporting propane, which is a good sign that they're trying to be proactive.
That's great to hear.
Yeah.
But it really highlights just how much goes into recovering from a disaster like this. It's so much more than just providing immediate shelter.
That's right. It's about rebuilding lives and communities, and that takes a lot more than just a roof over your head. We were talking about folks like Randy Staggs coming in and building tiny homes. It's amazing how people step up to help, but when we talk about long-term recovery, it's got to be about more than that, right?
Yeah, it's about building back in a way that actually makes communities stronger and more resilient. That's what people mean when they say building back better.
Exactly. It's not just replacing what was lost, but actually creating a future that can better withstand the next storm.
Okay, so how do you actually do that? How do you build back better after something like Helene?
Well, one place to start is with the infrastructure. How can we make sure homes and communities are better able to handle future storms?
Right.
So that could mean things like elevating structures, using stronger building materials, and making sure building codes are really enforced.
That makes sense, especially in a place like Western North Carolina that's so prone to flooding. But I'm guessing building back better is about more than just the physical stuff, right?
Oh, absolutely. You also have to think about the people and the economy. Like, how do you help businesses that were affected by the storm? How do you bring back jobs and help these communities get back on their feet?
It's about creating a future that's sustainable, not just putting a band-aid on the problem.
Exactly. And that takes real collaboration. You need government agencies, nonprofits, businesses, and most importantly, the communities themselves all working together.
It's been incredible to see how resilient and strong people have been in the face of this disaster.
Oh, it's remarkable how people come together to support each other, sharing resources, rebuilding their lives. It gives you hope.
Yeah, it does. You see it in the volunteers, the nonprofits, and even just the everyday acts of kindness that people show each other.
It just shows you that even when things are at their worst, the human spirit can really shine through.
It really does, and that spirit is going to be what fuels the long-term recovery effort.
You know, it makes me think about another aspect of recovery that we haven't really touched on yet, mental health. I can't imagine what people are going through emotionally after something like this.
Yeah, that's a really important part of the conversation, and it's often overlooked. The trauma of going through a hurricane, losing your home, and all the uncertainty that comes after can have a huge impact on people's mental well-being. Absolutely. So are there any resources available to help people who are struggling with these kinds of things?
Thankfully, yes. There are organizations that focus specifically on providing mental health support for disaster survivors.
Oh, yeah, that's good to hear.
They offer things like counseling support groups and other resources to help people process what they've been through.
You know, it's important to remember that recovery isn't just about rebuilding physical structures, it's about addressing the emotional and mental scars as well.
Exactly. You need a holistic approach that considers the whole person, their physical needs, their economic needs, and their mental well-being. It's all connected.
So looking ahead, what are some of the big lessons we can learn from Helene? Things that will help us be better prepared for future disasters.
I think one of the most important things is investing in mitigation efforts. Anything we can do to make ourselves less vulnerable to future disasters is key.
Okay.
That could mean things like strengthening our infrastructure, making smarter decisions about land use, and having good early warning systems in place.
So it's about trying to prevent as much damage as possible. But of course, even with the best planning, disasters are still going to happen. How can we make sure our response systems are up to the task?
That's a great question. We need to be able to get help to people quickly and efficiently while also thinking about the long-term recovery. So our systems need to be robust, but also adaptable, like we saw with the whole propane issue.
Right, it's like you have to be able to think on your feet and adjust to whatever challenges come up.
Exactly. And you also need that collaboration between different levels of government, nonprofits, businesses, and the communities themselves. Everyone has to work together.
We've seen some great examples of that in the response to Helene.
We have. It shows what can happen when everyone pulls together towards a common goal. And of course, we can't forget the power of community resilience. The people affected by Helene have shown incredible strength, compassion, and determination.
Absolutely. They're the ones who will rebuild their lives and communities. Our job is to support them however we can.
Exactly. You know, we've talked a lot about the practical stuff, the rebuilding effort, the logistical challenges, but I think it's important to take a step back and think about our relationship with nature.
That's an interesting thought. As we rebuild, how do we acknowledge the power of nature and the fact that we have to coexist with it, especially with climate change, making these kinds of extreme weather events more common?
It's a tough question. How do we protect ourselves from these events while also respecting and preserving the natural environment?
It's a balance, isn't it?
It is. I think it means making smart decisions about where and how we build, embracing sustainable practices, and investing in natural solutions that can help soften the blow of storms.
What do you mean by natural solutions? Are there specific things we can do to work with nature instead of against it?
Oh, definitely. Things like restoring wetlands and coastal forests can help buffer against storm surge and flooding. And incorporating green infrastructure into our communities can help manage stormwater runoff and erosion.
So it's all about recognizing that our built environment is connected to the natural world.
Right. And that working with nature can help create a more resilient and harmonious future. It's a really fascinating concept. But as we talk about building back, we can't forget about the impact these disasters have on the economy.
You're right. The economic consequences of something like Helene could be huge, and they last a lot longer than the immediate damage.
Exactly. Think about all the businesses that had to close, some of them maybe for good, the jobs that were lost, the tourism industry that was disrupted. It all adds up.
Yeah, it's like a ripple effect that touches everything.
It is. So how do you even begin to recover from that kind of economic shock? It's not easy.
No, it's not.
Well, you start by providing immediate financial assistance to businesses and individuals who lost income. That could be things like grants, loans, unemployment benefits. It's about getting people back on their feet as quickly as possible.
Okay, so that's the immediate relief, but I imagine there's also a need to invest in the future too.
Absolutely. Investing in infrastructure projects can create jobs and boost the economy. Rebuilding roads, bridges, and other essential things not only improves transportation and connectivity, but it also puts people to work.
So it helps in the short term and the long term.
Right. And we can't forget about industries like tourism that are so important to certain regions. Getting visitors back to these areas is key for the local economy.
So it's about showcasing that the community is resilient and that there's still a reason to visit even after a disaster.
Exactly. And long-term recovery also means supporting entrepreneurship and innovation. Helping small businesses recover and encouraging new industries can create a more diverse and resilient economy. You can actually turn a crisis into an opportunity.
That's a really interesting way to look at it. But it takes vision and everyone working together.
It does. It takes government support, private investment, and communities coming up with creative solutions. And it's important to remember that economic recovery is about more than just numbers. It's about people, their livelihoods, and their hopes for the future.
It's about creating a future where businesses can succeed and communities can flourish.
Exactly. And those are just a few of the many things that go into the long road to recovery after a disaster like Helene. As we move on to the next part of our deep dive, I think it's important to think about the role of policy and planning in all of this.
You're right. We can't just react to disasters as they happen. We need to be proactive and try to anticipate and reduce risks.
Exactly. And that means having good policies and plans in place at every level of government, from local communities all the way up to the federal level. It's about working together to make sure we're as prepared as possible.
So what are some of the key areas that need to be addressed to make that happen? What are the big things we need to be thinking about?
One of the most important things is to make sure our building codes are strong enough to withstand extreme weather. That might mean requiring things like hurricane straps, impact-resistant windows, and building foundations higher up in areas that flood a lot.
So basically building things smarter and tougher. But it also seems like we need to think about where we're building in the first place.
You got it. We need to do a better job of planning land use so that we're not building in high-risk areas. That means protecting natural barriers like wetlands and coastal forests and steering development away from places that are especially vulnerable to storms.
It's about working with nature, not against it. And of course, making sure people have enough warning when a storm is on the way is crucial.
Absolutely. Investing in early warning systems and having good evacuation plans can give people more time to prepare and get to safety. All of those things are really important for minimizing the impact of future disasters.
So prevention's a big part of it. But what about after a disaster strikes? What can we do to improve our response and recovery efforts?
For one thing, we need to make it easier for people to get federal assistance. We need to make sure that the aid is getting to the people who need it most and that it happens quickly and smoothly. And it's not just about the immediate response either, it's also about providing support for the long-term recovery process.
It sounds like we need a system that's both responsive and built to last.
Exactly. We need a comprehensive and coordinated approach that takes care of both the immediate and long-term needs of communities that have been hit by a disaster.
It's a big job, but all these policy considerations are going to determine how well we can handle and recover from disasters in the future. You know, we've talked a lot about the big picture stuff, but I think it's important to remember that at the heart of every disaster are the people who are affected.
Absolutely. Their stories make the disaster real in a way that numbers and statistics just can't. They're what connect us to the human impact of these events.
They remind us of how resilient people can be, the power of community, and the importance of being kind and compassionate.
You know, we've heard stories of loss and heartbreak, but also stories of hope, resilience, and people coming together to help each other.
Those stories really show the strength of the human spirit. They remind us that even when things are really tough, there's still strength, hope, and a way forward. And it's those stories that we'll explore in more detail in the final part of our deep dive. You know, we've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive, from the immediate impact of Helene to the long road to recovery that's ahead. But as we wrap things up, I keep thinking about the human side of it all.
Me too. It's easy to get caught up in all the numbers and policies and logistics, but it's the personal stories that really make this disaster hit home.
Absolutely. Earlier, we talked about Vicky Rivas living in that donated RV after her house was destroyed.
Right.
She was dealing with a broken furnace and using pine needles to keep warm. It's incredible what people can do when they have to.
It really is. And her story isn't unique. Remember Kathy Varvel? She's in a camper that Hope for Crisis provided, but she's constantly having to worry about keeping her propane tanks filled.
It's like a whole other layer of stress on top of everything else. And then you have someone like Randy Skaggs, who drove all the way from Illinois to help build tiny homes for people who lost everything.
Oh, yeah, talk about inspiring.
It really shows you that there are people out there who care enough to go above and beyond to help others in need.
He's not just putting a roof over people's heads, he's giving them back a sense of hope.
It's a powerful reminder that even one person can make a difference. But it's important to remember, Vicky, Kathy, and Randy are just three of the thousands of stories out there.
Yeah, every single person affected by Helene has their own story of lost resilience and hopefully recovery.
And it's those individual stories that really help us understand the true scale of this disaster.
Absolutely.
But it's not enough to just hear these stories, right? We have to learn from them and find ways to support these communities as they rebuild.
You got it. It's not about thoughts and prayers, it's about actually taking action.
So what can we do as individuals and as a society to help these communities recover and thrive?
Well, there are a lot of ways to get involved. You can donate to relief organizations, volunteer your time, speak up for policies that support disaster preparedness and recovery. Even just showing empathy and compassion can go a long way.
Yeah, sometimes the smallest gestures can have the biggest impact.
That's right. And it's also important to remember that the effects of a disaster like Helene are felt long after the initial event. Recovery is a long and difficult process, and it requires us to stay engaged even when it's not in the news anymore.
That's so important. So as we end this deep dive, let's all keep these stories in mind. Let's remember the resilience of the human spirit, and let's commit to being part of the solution.
Let's work together to build back better and create a future where all communities are stronger and more prepared for whatever comes next.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the aftermath of Hurricane Helene. We hope you've learned something and that you feel inspired to support the people and communities affected by this devastating storm.
Every act of kindness, every donation, every voice raised in support can make a real difference.
That's right. Together, we can help these communities rebuild, recover, and ultimately thrive. Thanks for listening.